At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Athletic.
Right, I'm recording. Bonjour.
Vous pouvez aller là-bas. Là-bas, on vous dérange pas. Là-bas.
I have to.
Oui, oui. On vous dérange pas là-bas.
Okay. Mais je dois recorder un podcast. Je dois recorder.
Ok.
Si j'étais.
Réunion.
Ouais.
Ok.
So I need. Je dois une place.
Ici.
Ici. Ok.
Oui, ok.
Merci beaucoup.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne. The nights are drawn in and the temperatures have plummeted, but Newcastle United turned up the heat on Chelsea on Saturday. I'm joined by a very Parisian Jacob Whitehead and an always sunny Christopher Wolf. You managing all right in the cold, Chris? How are you getting on?
Oh, me mate, these aching bones, yeah, they struggled over the weekend a little bit. I'll be honest, second half, although I don't have the sort of heated garments that George Culkin has, I did in the second half put on some fingerless gloves because the temperature did drop during that second half.
It absolutely did. Have the pyjamas changed yet? Have you gone into winter pyjama territory, like the full sort of long johns with a shit flap on the back? That's what I imagine you wearing.
You see, you're prompting me to talk about things that other people aren't going to want to listen about. I actually just go boxers all year round. You see, my body struggles to regulate temperature, so it's always.
I was thinking about this on my dog walk. Don't ask me why. Wondering.
What about what I wear for bed?
What pajamas would each pod on the Tyne have? I had you with full long johns with a shit flap in the back. George with like silk robes, with like one of those hats with a bobble on it, and you know, like a lantern. Jacob obviously Spider-Man pajamas. Ollie in very functional Marks and Spencer's numbers, and I just wear the Batman suit. You know what I mean? Jacob Whitehead's here as well. Jacob, you're in what sounds like a school canteen. Are you all right?
Yeah, I am soaking up the Parisian atmosphere, but it's not so much baguette coffee shops. I am in the lobby of my hotel, having been promised a nice quiet recording space. I'm afraid we may have some interruptions from the Hoover. I've done my best negotiations with GCSE level French to try and locate this quiet corner. So we'll see how that goes as the podcast unfolds. But lovely to be here.
Have they asked you to wait in the lobby? Are they like worried that it's like a child who's travelled without his parents?
Unaccompanied minor. The situation with a sign around his neck.
Well, it took me a while to get through passport control because I had to meet my chaperone.
Have you got one of them suitcases that you ride on? You know, the ones that you sit on, your man pulls you along?
Oh, yeah, but it's quite hard to pull yourself, so careful. I just have to go up to random strangers and ask them to do it.
Don't be doing that around the streets of Paris. Right, let's crack on. A few nerves flying around before the Chelsea game, not helped by the absence of Sean Longstaff and Joe Willock from the matchday squad. Newcastle's bench described by one punter as 3 keepers, 4 academy graduates and 2 grown-ups. Chris, it was pretty desperate, wasn't it, when that team sheet come out? We thought, oh my God, what's happening here?
It was. I mean, that was quite the sort of deflating looking bench, particularly when you looked at Chelsea's bench and the sort of value that they had on it. I think when they brought on in the second half, it was Breuer, who was an academy graduate, but you had Mudrick and Caicedo, who cost a combined £162 million initially. They came on during the second half, whereas Newcastle, as you say, three debutants ended up coming on from the under-21s. Great moments for them,
yeah.
But really not quite considered ready to be in that moment. They're there out of necessity more than anything else. Three goalkeepers, which I emailed Opta, who provides stats, to try and find out whether this is a Premier League record. They couldn't confirm that, but four goalkeepers in a matchday squad. I mean, we've only had nine substitutes in the Premier League for two or three seasons. I think we can safely say it must equal a record if it doesn't actually set a record for that. So Longstaff, his absence had been a little bit expected with his ankle injury. He's going to be a significant doubt for PSG as well. But Joe Willock was the huge blow. I mean, Joe Willock only broke down on Friday as well. So for once, Eddie Howe didn't even come into his press conference and basically lied that there wasn't anyone else who was absent. He wouldn't confirm whether Alexander Isak was going to be involved, but Willock happened afterwards. And I mean, I'd spoken to people in and around Newcastle during the international break for a piece looking at the situation at the moment and going forward. And already they were basically saying they're almost counting up the numbers. There was five sort of senior players who you'd class as out-and-out senior players training during the international break for the entirety of the international break. They feared things may get worse before they get better on the injury front, and that was a significant blow before kickoff, certainly, when Willock...
Do we know what the Willock injury is? Is it a reoccurrence or is it something new?
It's a reoccurrence of his Achilles problem. So initially he was out with a hamstring problem for the end of last season. Then he suffered an Achilles problem, and this is a recurrence of that. Now, Howe said he's going to see a specialist at the moment, tomorrow, I think. So they don't know the full extent of it, but it didn't sound great. It certainly doesn't sound like it's going to be a game or two. I think you're talking a matter of weeks is probably best case scenario there. And given the impact he's had since he's come back, that sort of running power you've seen, that did feel like a significant blow.
Absolutely not what we need at the minute, is it? Still Newcastle needn't have worried. We've got Alexander Isak back and Lewis Miley as well. Not an easy chance for Isak. Sorted his feet out and tucked it away nicely. But that pass through from Lewis Miley, Jacob, what a ball that was, and composure from the young man.
That's it. It's not necessarily the pass itself. It's everything which comes around it. It's the kind of almost fake shot which just holds the run of the covering defender enough to keep the channel open. It's the weight of it which is absolutely perfect. But I think it's also just confidence to play it. I mean, we're in the first 10 minutes of a match here, and he's just received it quickly on his back foot to sort out his feet and then just instantly make a decision, receive, bang,
yeah,
play it in. So composed. And yeah, like Isak did well just to lift it over the keeper. Simple finish, but the one, you know, you want him to take.
I don't know if this sort of came across when people were watching it as well, but the weird thing about the game itself was Chelsea are just chaotic. There's so much around the game which was chaotic.
Yep.
And like that, their defending, if you watch that, was pretty chaotic. I mean, Trippier manages to float the ball in from the right. Gordon gets it on the left-hand side of the box, turns away. Cole Palmer doesn't really bother Foreign, so he puts it centrally. Joe Linton flicks the ball back to him. And four Chelsea players are running towards Miley, who's on the edge of the D. But he, as Jacob says, he takes that touch calmly and has the wherewithal to first of all spot the pass, which I think a lot of senior players, never mind 17-year-olds, would necessarily have spotted. So to have the vision...
Lots of players would have had a shot there.
Exactly.
Loads.
Or put it to Almiron, who was on the right, and that wouldn't necessarily have been a terrible ball because he was in a bit of space. And that's what holds Kukurea, which is why Isak is then onside when the ball is played through. And I mean, Isak is almost surprised that the pass comes to him. You can see he sorts his feet out very well. But for a 17-year-old in that environment, it was... Eddie Howe said that just sums up everything about Lewis Miley. That it's his football brain that they really like, and that he's head and shoulders above everyone else's level. I mean, if you watch... Anyone who watched the under-21s regularly last year would tell you that Lewis Miley looked out of place because he was far too good for that level by that stage when he was 16. He's now a fully fledged member of the senior squad. I asked Howe about this on Friday, and he said, we made that decision in the summer. They were essentially looking for two central midfielders, a signed Tonali, but Miley basically convinced him of, we can maybe prioritise other areas because Miley, we think, is going to be ready. And he's had glandular fever. He's actually still not 100% shaken off all the after effects of that. And yeah, he's come into the side, plays as number six at Bournemouth, one of the few positives there. Plays as a number eight, and yes, that was the typified his display, really. And then you mentioned Isak being out for a month, but picks off 13 minutes in where he'd left off, five goals and five Premier League matches. He just can't stop scoring.
Brilliant. Yeah, Lewis Miley definitely playing football beyond his years, Chris, isn't he? And he's now the youngest ever assist provider for Newcastle United in the Premier League. That's some notch for his bedpost, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think he's the sixth youngest Premier League player ever to assist a goal. He's the first since, I think it's 2015, I think it was Jonathan Lecco at West Brom. And yeah, it's the fact that he hasn't just come into the team and is just there. He actually had that huge impact. And it was an important goal, an important moment, because as I was mentioning about Chelsea, we saw this after Chelsea equalised as well, that really Newcastle in some ways got dragged into their chaos, particularly in midfield. It just felt like there were bodies everywhere, no real control, certainly from Chelsea, but Newcastle were trying to sort of control that. And as soon as Newcastle scored, it settled any nerves that you mentioned before. And until Chelsea equalised, it was basically all Newcastle. And it was almost like the Alamo. It was weird, that shift. It was like Chelsea, suddenly every time Newcastle attacked, Chelsea panicked and looked like they might score again. And that all came from that pass and that cool head and that 13th minute, which put Newcastle ahead.
Yeah, Chelsea were dangerous going forward, Jacob, weren't they? Kieran Trippier pulls down Raheem Sterling, who then pops the free kick over the wall to make it 1-1. But Chelsea were so porous at the back. The ball was going through numerous times. There was chances all over the place. And like Chris said before, it was just chaos back there, wasn't it?
Yeah, glorious free kick from Sterling. I think a knuckleball is probably the most aesthetically pleasing
free
kick. I think it's a knuckleball. Yeah, it went up and down.
No, a knuckleball.
Yeah, but he came at
it
straight away. No.
Is it not? I'll ask my 12-year-old son. He knows more about these things than I do, to be honest.
Chris? Verdict?
I think it was a knuckleball sort of thing. Yeah, I don't think it was a full-on one, but it was certainly that sort of technique.
Luckily, we're in different countries, so we can't have a fist fight over this. But but yes, I mean, returning to matters which you can definitely agree on, yes, Chelsea at the back, as Chris said earlier, is a bit crazy. I mean, Reece James is such a good player, but yet just seemed constantly caught out of position. Thiago Silva, hugely so classy. And, I mean, there's that moment where he was under pressure from Anthony Gordon in the corner.
Brilliant.
And it almost looked... I wasn't quite sure what he was trying to do. If he was trying to step over...
I thought he was trying to do
a piece of skill.
A scoop turn where he was kind of turning away from him, but he just fell on his
arse. But to fall over it, and then... It was the way also that Gordon then just sort of stared him down, like when a boxer puts someone down on the canvas and they just give it a couple of seconds just to look. And I mean, then we're going out of order slightly here, but Thiago Silva then, I mean, is all compounded by his error for Gillington's goal, that lack of confidence, which Newcastle's front three had almost forced by relentlessly putting him under pressure throughout the game, and the mistake came.
Yeah, we'll get to that moment in a minute. Jamal Lascelles, Chris, he got the freedom of the Gallagher end, didn't he, to head the ball in for the second one. Another great story. And he was a little bit at fault, wasn't he, for the first goal, the Chelsea goal. He came bustling forward and lost the ball and wasn't able to get back.
Yeah, and I mean, basically the sort of way that Chelsea were trying to play it was almost trying to catch Newcastle in those sorts of situations on transition in the middle, and Lascelles was caught out in that stage. It actually looked like Lascelles may have been injured in the first half, but it turned out subsequently that what had happened was one of his studs had snapped and they'd given him replacement boots, one of which was a size 9 and one of which was a size 11. Don't really understand why he didn't have any spare boots. That part wasn't sort of clarified. But so he's running around the pitch, and he said afterwards he admitted that I wasn't having a very good game in the first half. He was sort of at fault. Trippier ends up coming across and fouling Sterling for the free kick, which leads to the goal. Some people said it was a bit soft. Sterling almost seemed to get caught in two minds, as if I don't quite have the pace to go forward here. I don't want to pass to Nicholas Jackson because he's not very good in front of goal, and so just seemed to panic at the two, and Trippier came across. I mean, just on the goal, I saw Nick Pope come under a bit of criticism for the free kick. What are your two thoughts? Because it's a very, very good free kick, but obviously it's not really in the top corner. He doesn't really move, but I mean, I'm not saying he should save it, but it just seemed a bit odd that he just didn't really move. He seemed surprised by it.
I think he thinks it's well over the bar and it just dips too quick, and I just don't think he reacts at all. I was surprised that he didn't make any kind of move towards it, but I think he thinks it's well over the bar. I don't know what you think, Jacob.
I suppose when it's that close in, it's just kind of, what, less than 25 yards. You are relying on your wall to completely block off that half of the goal, and you just cover, you almost cheat slightly to the side which you're on to just cover kind of it being whipped quickly into the corner. So I think he can be let off that one. But the knuckle on it really took it out of his reach.
That's fair. I mean, just on, but picking up on Lascelles and the sort of the goal in the second half. I mean, you mentioned in the piece that I wrote after the game, I focused on Miley and Lascelles, and it's almost like the two players who, despite Newcastle's injury crisis, they're two players who've sort of come in, and it's like the captain reborn and the sort of player of the future have come in. They're the two beneficiaries of it, and the two positive news stories, because I mean, Lascelles has played 11 of the last start 11 of the last 12 matches, six of which Newcastle have won. And he's come in and he has looked vastly improved. There were so many questions about what role he could have in this team going forward. Was he an Eddie Howe player? There's still questions about his long-term future. His contract's up next summer. He could have left in the summer just gone. He had sort of interest in elsewhere in England, lower half Premier League, Championship, and also in Turkey. He didn't. He stayed. And you can see he's trying to adapt to the way that Eddie Howe plays, and he certainly does look much improved. And he met the wonderful Anthony Gordon cross that it was whipped in the second half. And again, Chelsea just gave him the freedom of the penalty area. And then Lascelles scored. And I saw a tweet from someone, I can't remember who it was, just saying, there's something about Jamal Lascelles that every time he scores, he just looks so angry. And he does. It's like Isak comes across and almost like screams at him as if to say it's brilliant. But maybe that was Lascelles sort of giving off that I had to deliver that. I had to deliver a big moment. And it was a big moment because then the momentum completely shifted.
I have a picture of me and Jamal Lascelles together before a Newcastle game where I was at St James's Park and I got a photo with him and he looks fucking furious, Chris. Absolutely furious.
I would be as well, to be fair. Stood there with you. It's like, well, he's probably thinking, what a waste of time.
Fair enough. Can't really argue with that.
I was also quite pleased to see that it was a set piece goal, because I was worried that after I wrote about it a couple of weeks ago that the set piece curse, that, you know, since I started thinking about it, they hadn't scored one since Sheffield United game. They'd conceded two.
Does that go down as a set piece goal, that one?
Absolutely, Taylor. Don't you even? I thought
quite
about
a few
this.
Passes they before that ball goes in the box, Jacob.
Oh well, sorry for being elaborate. I didn't realise we'd just like lump it up to the back post. It's completely designed. It's deliberate. They play two quick passes laterally across to get it to that left wing and retain all the centre-backs up there for the ball while Chelsea try and push out and they exploit that. It is absolutely a set piece. Every pass of that went exactly as they wanted it to.
I think that's open play, Chris.
You would, but you'd be wrong, just like the Nottingham ball. I've got some at 4:45 this morning. I'm not in the mood to suffer fools gladly.
Quite chippy today, aren't you? Quite chippy.
Chippy, but not chipper.
No, definitely not chipper. Anthony Gordon, Chris, you mentioned him before. He had a great game, didn't he? An assist, a goal, rounded off the scoring shortly after he was fouled by Reece James. Stupid booking, the first one for him. And the second one, it's as clear a yellow as you're going to see. He saw red for that, and then he sat down a little earlier than planned, didn't he?
He did. I mean, this intro, you mentioned the sort of sitting down. So that's referencing for anyone who didn't necessarily know that in the first half, there was an issue with Joe Linton, who did have a bit of a stray arm, which came across and caught a Chelsea player, who I've forgotten exactly who it was. But anyway, Reece James and Jason Tindall on the touchline were having a bit of an exchange, and Reece James appeared to repeatedly tell him to sit down. And now, as certain people within Newcastle United said to me afterwards, it wasn't Jason Tindall who sat down first. It was Reece James who ended up sitting down first. So that I think they enjoyed the fact that yes, he was dismissed for that. But Gordon, yes, I think at Bournemouth there was people in after that. There was people sort of within Newcastle who thought that really he was mentally fatigued as much as anything else. Anthony Gordon, you've got to remember that he basically didn't have a summer off. He's been going non-stop. He's been the one who's dragged Newcastle through a lot of matches. And at Bournemouth, he sort of didn't look himself, wasn't quite as active, just wasn't really there. And this international break has served him really well. He's one of those five senior players who was on Tyneside, didn't get the call up to the England squad, which I'm sure would have been disappointed with. But it gave him a bit of a refresh. And he looked back to his very best, back on the left from the start, which is where you really want to see him. He's been covering in when necessary through the middle and did score there later on, but equally he's more effective on the flanks. Played a role in the first goal, gets the assist for the second goal, and with the second goal, which Howe said was a massive moment in our season, and I agree with him because I'd said last week that I thought this Chelsea game was huge in terms of the momentum it could build for what is a very difficult period with the squad in the situation that they're in. And obviously two becomes three within a minute. Jacob referenced it earlier, the mistake Thiago Silva makes. That all comes from Joe Linton barrelling round and following about four different passes before he gets to Thiago Silva, who panics and gives a ball back. And from 3-1 onwards, it only looked like one team who was going to score and keep scoring. Obviously, Gordon takes his goal later on very, very well. But it's also an absolutely excellent ball through from Miguel Almiron. A little beautiful round the corner, sort of left-footed pass. And I actually think And I'll see the wry smirk on your face at the moment, Taylor, but I actually think that we are seeing the very best of Miguel Almirón now. I know he's not scoring as often, but I think that he is really contributing in so many ways now, and you can see Newcastle are much improved when he's in the side.
I'll tell you what, mate, I like him playing on the left-hand side as well. I don't know about you, but he's played there a couple of times this season, and he's done really well. I mean, that ball with the outside of his foot for Gordon is beautiful, but that lad is playing some really good football, and I think there's some quarters who don't give him the credit he deserves. I think he's a very good footballer. You know, he's not a world beater. He's not a glamour player or anything like that. But the amount of work he does and the actual nitty-gritty stuff that he does for the team is really impressive, I think.
It was also just nice on that Gordon goal to see him cutting in from the left and shooting on his right. As I think Chris has spoken about before, it's something he worked on with Jason Tindall. It's been a calling card of his going back to his academy days at Everton, which he then had to almost put away for a couple of years because he couldn't quite adjust to that particular skill at Premier League level. And it's nice to see now, I think, two or three goals this season already has come from that movement, and it's such a dangerous weapon.
Absolutely. Chris, Mehrdad Gedussi and Jamie Rubin, they ruffled a few feathers, didn't they, after the game with a little Twitter exchange about the atmosphere. Bit of an unnecessary thing to say, really, isn't it, when you've just won 4-1?
It was rather odd timing, particularly given that then Amanda Staveley in her Instagram post said something about the atmosphere being amazing. And I wouldn't say that I necessarily noticed that it was a poor atmosphere. I mean, there were times where I think it felt nervy. But yeah, it was rather odd timing. I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinion on what it's like, and everyone's entitled to put that on X or wherever you want to share it. And so I think that's fair enough if you want to create a debate. But I mean, I listened to the True Faith podcast over the weekend, and they discussed this, and I thought they made some interesting and valid points that it's fair enough if maybe Mehrdad Gedussi feels this way, but you don't just generate an atmosphere by saying we need to generate an atmosphere. And it's about how do you actually approach that? Do you bring in a singing section? Do you move things around a little bit? Do you turn down the ridiculously loud music 10 minutes before the game where nobody can actually hear each other think or speak to the person sat next to you? There's all these different things that you can come with. As I say, it just felt weird timing, and it's opened up a debate, which I'm sure will continue going forward. And as I said, a fair enough on their opinion. I just thought after a 4-1 win, which felt crucial, and given everything else that's going around the club at the moment with injuries and the like, and the fact that Newcastle got to PSG tomorrow night, I just thought it was a bit of an odd timing.
It's a strange one, isn't it, Jacob? Because, you know, we've been away to these Champions League grounds in Dortmund and Milan, and we've heard the crowds there. Maybe Mehrdad and Jamie have been to those matches and thought, why can't we have a bit of this at St James's Park? You know, I kind of understand that they want the ground as loud and as noisy as it can be. But those situations and those teams that we went to visit, it's a different situation altogether, isn't it? Culturally, historically, all of that sort of stuff. Newcastle United, St James' Park is not the same as the San Siro in Milan.
Yeah, it's a false equivalence. I mean, for example, Dortmund, you've got the yellow wall, which is, what, 30,000 odds? I mean, it's just artificially going to be more. And then also, I mean, it's the fact that, of course, the atmosphere is going to be absolutely massive there because it's a Champions League game at home. Like, it's always going to be one of the sort of 5, 6, 7 noisiest matches of the season. So then to compare it to kind of an ordinary Premier League fixture, yes, it's Chelsea, but Chelsea are mid-table. You know, it's what not one of them, an important game, but not one of the most important games of the season. You can't really draw them together like that. And yes, like Chris said, it's the timing, which is quite odd. I mean, there was lots of complaints after the Dortmund game at home because that one was quite flat, but then from chatting to people who were there, it doesn't sound like this was notably quiet at all.
I'm sure the debate over that will rage on social media for the next 4 or 5 weeks. So Chris's Chelsea report is on The Athletic now, plus plenty more, including coverage of the Premier League's recent shareholders meeting, Jacob and Liam Tharm, on the addictive personalities of professional footballers, and a write-up on Lewis Hall, who we'll probably be talking about a little later. Subscribe now via theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to pay just £1.99, that's pounds, dollars or euros, a month for your first 12 months. Right then, chaps, on to the women's team. Another triumph for Becky Langley's NUFCW, who beat Chorley 4-0 in the FA Cup. They're now 26 games unbeaten since defeat at Kingston Park against Wolves last December. That was the third round of the FA Cup, and we'll go into the same stage again. By the time this podcast reaches your ears, the draw will have taken place live on Instagram. So good luck to the lasses for that. Right, we'll be back in just a moment to talk about that PSG game and the Premier League shareholders meeting. Back in a tick. So we made a brief reference to the Premier League's recent shareholders meeting, but that was all anyone was talking about for 24 hours. So we should probably catch up on what exactly happened, Chris.
Yes, well, we did discuss it a little bit on the previous podcast that this was a vote on whether associated clubs, as they are referred to, could basically, whether there'd be a temporary ban on loan deals between them, and this was relevant to Newcastle United.
It's always relevant to Newcastle United, isn't it?
Well, exactly, as much as other Premier League clubs try to argue that it wasn't focused on Newcastle United, the urgency of it certainly seemed like it was, and people in Newcastle certainly felt that way. But basically, Newcastle are majority owned by PIF. PIF also now have stakes in four Saudi Pro League clubs, and Ruben Neves is the player who obviously was repeatedly linked, although my information is within Newcastle they haven't discussed him as a target this year, even if they do have liked him long term. And the vote was close. I'd said on the podcast previously I'd heard it was going to be close, and it went 12-8 that voted in favour of it, but in the Premier League you need 14 votes for something to pass, and so it didn't go through. So in theory, Newcastle are still able to sign players on loan from the Saudi Pro League in January, and I was at Eddie Howe's press conference on Friday where I was asked repeatedly about this, and although he didn't fully bite, he did basically suggest that he was very frustrated that all of the narrative around it had been surrounding Newcastle United. He said this affects everyone the same. He said anyone else can sign players from this. He didn't say specifically the Saudi Pro League, but he was basically saying everyone else can do deals with them, why shouldn't we be able to? And also, I know there's a general irritation inside the club that something they weren't necessarily going to do anyway, that there was this rush to force it through, as there was post-takeover with related party transactions and sort of deals with associated companies in that respect, ones owned by PIF. So yes, this was a big talking point. It certainly split the Premier League. And Jacob was actually at the hotel in London where it was taking place, weren't you, Jacob?
Yep, so I was there with my newspaper with the eye holes cut in it to spy on what was going on. Nicely, I mean, I got there earlier than Amanda Staveley, who rushed through at 10:29 for the 10:30 meeting. But Darren Eales was there working the room beforehand, very popular man in these sorts of circles. And usually these meetings are kind of done in 2 or 3 hours. This one was an absolute marathon. I sat in this lobby opposite a bust of Sir Winston Churchill for about 6 hours until 4 p.m. when we all traipsed out, and you could kind of see a little bit of a rancour, because, I mean, this, it was quite an emotive topic, because, I mean, to an extent, to challenge some of what Howe was saying, it does affect Newcastle differently. This, I mean, like, PIF own four clubs in the Saudi Pro League. There is an element of, it's not even the element of, but it's the potential for it to be crossed wires there, for potential to work together, and that's why some people were so emotive about it. And it also kind of splits down the whole multi-club versus non-multi-club split. And you've kind of now got these kind of two different sects in the Premier League. You've got one which is kind of the top six, seven versus everyone else. And you've got the multi-club ownership group teams versus the ones who aren't involved in that. And so it leads to just all of this division and drama. And we say more than ever that football's being played in the boardrooms and, well, with Everton in the courtrooms. And yeah, I mean, just last week was an absolute classic example of it.
Yes, it's all a little bit messy, isn't it? Right, let's move on. We've got this little last bit to do before we finish up. Final game of the month. It's a small matter, Chris, of a must-win Champions League game against Paris Saint-Germain. It doesn't get any bigger than this, does it?
It doesn't. I mean, Newcastle need a minimum of 4 points from the final two group games to have a chance of going through, but really they could do with winning them both, because they've lost back-to-back against Borussia Dortmund, and the Champions League group doesn't work with goal difference. It goes by head-to-head. Basically, they have to secure a greater number of points than Borussia Dortmund to otherwise they would finish behind them. And Newcastle hammered PSG at St James's Park 4-1 that famous night, which none of us will ever forget who witnessed it, whether they were there or watched it on TV. They've shown they can do it against PSG, but it's how both sides react to that. Have PSG learned from that? Luis Enrique was asked after they beat Milan the following match week about their performance then, and he said, has everyone else forgotten about Newcastle. I haven't forgotten about Newcastle, so it's on his mind whether he can get that through to his players as well. It'll be interesting to see, because they couldn't deal with Newcastle's intensity. But obviously, this is a very stretched Newcastle side. We've seen that they are managing to outperform the situation that they're in for large part. They fell off a cliff just before the international break, but they've come back strong against Chelsea. They've got much needed momentum there. But can they go to Paris and follow up the Chelsea win? Can Alexander Isak start two games in 4 days? That's a big question mark as well. This squad will be stretched, but it's going to be a huge, huge night, yeah.
It's a massive occasion, Jacob, isn't it? You are our man in Paris for this one as well. How is it over there? How is the atmosphere? Is there much of... I know you've literally just arrived and got off the train, but how is it feeling?
Yeah, it's quite tough. I mean, I got off the Gare du Nord at 20 past 10, and when I was in the hotel 20 minutes later, I saw one Newcastle shirt. It was sort of a 90s replica of that red and blue hooped away kit.
Lovely kit, yeah.
In the Eurostar. Apart from that, I mean, my plan after recording is to head up to Montmartre to see if anyone is there overlooking the city, getting ready. And then I'm sure I'll post an update for everyone soon. It's Eddie Howe speaking later this evening, which I will be at as well.
Unlike the previous two Champions League away games, Newcastle are training at the stadium this evening.
Right.
So that's Monday evening as we record. They didn't do that in Milan. They didn't do that in Dortmund, but they have changed. Unsure exactly why, but whether that's to try and acclimatise, whether that's because they've noticed mistakes. Because if you think about both away games, Newcastle have started very slowly and then haven't been able to... That Milan, they held on and managed to get the draw. Dortmund, they only started playing once they fell behind. So whether it's something to do with that, it's interesting to see. But yeah, Newcastle are actually going to train at the Parc des Princes.
And Lewis Hall's available again, isn't he, Chris, after being unable to play against his parent club. And hopefully Emil Kraft will be feeling a little bit better after his illness as well.
Yes, well, Emil Kraft may be feeling better, but unfortunately he can't play because he's not in the Champions League squad. So it's a different squad. So Kraft won't be there. Matt Ritchie, who is one of the senior, or whatever it is, adults that you said was on the bench over the weekend.
Grown-ups,
he is also unable to be in the squad. Lewis Hall is available again after being ineligible to play against his parent club. Be interesting to see if he starts, because obviously Tino Livramento started at left back against Chelsea. Looked very good, I thought, defensively. Yep. Didn't really offer too much going forward, but it's almost that when you've got Kieran Trippier right back, the left back doesn't go forward as often. And I think that's where the balance with Trippier and Hall hasn't necessarily been there yet, because Hall wants to get forward. But Newcastle still convinced that Lewis Hall is the right long-term option. They've signed him with this loan with obligation to buy. He's starting to see a greater number of minutes. He's obviously been hooked three times at half time, but for various different reasons. But you would be surprised if he wasn't at least involved in some way in Paris, because it's going to be pretty much a very similar starting 11. There's going to be no Joe Willock back. Sean Longstaff's unlikely to be back. So I think the three will probably continue in midfield, who played ever so well. I mean, Bruno Guimaraes come back in the team. We didn't mention him earlier, but he just oozes class in there. And I think that really helped Lewis Miley as well, having Bruno Guimaraes inside of him, the one of the number six who could take the ball. And Newcastle tick more when he's there. So I think that it's going to be a very similar 11 to the one we saw on Saturday, but whether Alexander Isak can start or whether Gordon plays through the middle and then Isak comes on will be interesting to see.
Well, and PSG have their own issues as well, don't they, Jacob? Zaire Emery not available, and he was probably their best player at St James's Park.
Yeah, Zaire Emery, he set up the goal in return fixture, sort of crossed it in, looped in for Antonandes, just kind of flicked it in. But I mean, he's so under-talked about, I think, as a player. I mean, 17 years old, starting midfield every week for one of the best teams in Europe. I mean, it's as if kind of Lewis Miley was starting for Man City every week in midfield, no?
Yeah.
So obviously he's a big player, big loss for them. And you saw, I guess the big talk seems to be, is Luis Enrique going to carry on with his extremely bold 4-2-4 formation of not playing anyone in midfield? Yeah. And especially now there's no Zaire Emery. You're effectively left with Ugarte covering loads and loads of space. So stick or twist. I mean, he's kind of a manager who likes to play his way or the highway, so it wouldn't surprise me.
I'd like to suggest that he does. Please do that. Go for it. Just 4-2-4.
Well, Jacob and I disagreed on this after the first match, but I thought Ugarte was awful. I accepted Jacob's point that he had no support in midfield, but he was awful. So if he could continue that sort of form, that would very much benefit Newcastle in this match. And obviously, I think Kylian Mbappe, who we haven't mentioned that much, will have a lot to try and prove in this one. PSG played on Friday night, won convincingly, and Mbappe was on the score sheet again. So yeah, I think it's important that the try. It's going to be a difficult night for whether it's Livramento or Trippier, whoever is playing at right back is going to need support from Miguel Almiron and Lewis Miley if it is him on the right side of number 8.
I think it's fair to say PSG will be looking for revenge, won't they? Right then, we're just about to finish things off. I've got one little email to read out here before we do that. This is from Simon Story. Simon says, big fan of the show. I've spent 5 wonderful years married to my amazing wife, and during this time, I've slowly worked on her becoming a diehard mag. She now has all her own Toon shirts, and even when she's not with me, she follows the scores live. I thought the next logical step would be to get her into listening to your podcast. However, Chris Wolf undid all of my hard work with one single stroke last week, and now I fear I've lost my North Macedonian wife forever. Chris, what have you got to say for yourself?
Just an official apology to every single North Macedonian out there. My sleep-deprived state last week meant that my geography skills were lacking. My cousin, who is actually a geography teacher, messaged me and said, this is why you should have studied geography and not history. And yes, this is, I just want, yeah, an official apology to the entire North Macedonian nation and general populace around the world.
Absolutely. Simon finished his email off with, good work as always, Waffles. Maybe stick to reporting on Western Europe with its sausages instead of branching out further east, which I think is fair enough, isn't it?
I have my own story of getting into trouble with this. So you aren't alone, Chris, which is my very first piece for The Athletic. I watched North Macedonia's debut in the European Championships with North Macedonian fans. However, North Macedonians like to be called just Macedonia. There's this big debate with Greece over it. And so seeing as I'd spent the whole day with them and made friends, I called them Macedonia throughout the article, as they wanted to. I published it. First ever piece of The Athletic. 5 minutes later, I have about 20 messages on my Twitter from Greek nationalists complaining at me, giving me death threats. And I'm thinking, what is being a journalist here? This is the reaction you get. But I've suddenly waded into sort of a Balkan conflict. It's absolutely awful. So, Chris, you want to learn?
Has your time as a journalist improved with spending time with us, or has it just nosedived even further?
Less personal insults and questions about the health of my mother. So, yeah, it is better now.
Excellent. Right then, let's finish off, chaps. Thank you very much, Chris Woff, for your time.
You're very welcome. I'm not going to wear my fingerless gloves inside today. I do actually have central heating in my house, so yes, I'm going to protect myself from the cold in that sense.
Excellent. And thank you very much, Jacob, as well.
Thank you very much for having me. Look forward to the next couple of days in Paris, and I'll catch you soon.
Go and get a croissant.
Yeah, get yourself a croissant, get up Montmartre and have a good look around. Lovely stuff. Excellent. Right, there we go. Email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com or get in touch with us at podonthetyne on Twitter. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back later on this week. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Athletic.